You know, I love that flute. Every time I hear that song, I love that flute. It's just, it's perfect. At
Jim,
the end
would
of
you
that
say
song.
Would you say it tickles your inner light?
Yes, I would say that. It's Gorn-tastic, actually. I love it. Hey, guys, welcome to Trek Talk, and it's Monday night at 7:30 p.m. We are live. Give us a call at 646-668-2433, and you can join the conversation. And as you may have guessed, since we played the Picard theme song, we're going to be talking about Picard. That's right. We're doing Book Nook, and I can't remember when was the last Book Nook that we did. It was a while ago.
Months.
Wow.
Months.
Months and months and months, months ago. Yeah, it's been a long time. But with this little hiatus that we have, we got to suffer through a whole month without new Star Trek. So it's time to bring back some of the golden oldies, blow off the dust and bring them back. So Book Nook is one of them. And tonight we're going to be talking about Rogue Elements, a Star Trek Picard novel. And it was written by John Jackson Miller, one of my favorite authors. And we're going to be talking all about, yes, he's one of my favorites now. Who laughed? I heard that.
we'll clarify for the listeners here in a moment.
But this book is all about Rios, and basically, you know, how did he get La Serena? What was he doing before he hooked up with Picard? It's like all the backstory about Rios. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Book Nook. It's going to be a lot of fun. There probably will be some spoilers because I don't see how we can talk about this book without talking about some of the things that are in the book. But so hopefully you've already read it because we're a little bit behind on our book nooks. So before we get too far, though, I would like to introduce to you guys my awesome Trekspert. And we'll start out with Charles. He's out in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Dealing with monsoon season again. Got a rain shower that passed through today, maybe an hour ago. I said we actually got a good rain out of this one instead of getting skipped over again.
Well, I got to tell you, it has been brutally hot up here the last couple of days. We actually had the heat index broke 105, and it was we broke a record for the hottest day. I mean, I just kind of hung out in the camper reading this awesome book called Rogue Elements and finishing it up because it was just too hot to go outside. It was just brutal up at camp. So at any rate.
We've had those days here too.
Yeah. Well, we don't get those up here a lot. That's the odd thing. That's weird. I walked the dog in the morning, and it's so cold you can see your breath. And by lunchtime, it's 95 degrees. It's like, my, that's so weird how the temperature can swing that much. But at any rate, we also have with us from Portland our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing great. And apparently it's everywhere. We were 95 today. We're supposed to be like 103 tomorrow. And it's here all week. So it's hot all around. So there you go. That's the weather report from the triangle of Trek Talking.
Yeah.
which covers coast to coast and in some ways north to south. Like all we need is somebody in Florida to kind of like round it out. But
well, I'll tell you what, Eric, I hope it clears out by Trek Conoroga because they have it in the high school and there's no air conditioning there. So it's stifling.
We got a couple of weeks. Yeah. So we cross our fingers and hope for, 60s that week.
Let's hope. So we're going to talk about Book Nook and Rogue Elements, which is the backstory of Rios. And I have to tell you guys to start off with, first of all, John Jackson Miller, he's written some great stuff, some of my favorite stuff he's written. Yeah, not quite, not exactly. I've read one book that he wrote, and I hated it. So I actually, when Charles brought this up, I wasn't really thrilled about reading this book for two reasons. I the last book I read by him, I didn't like at all. So I wasn't excited. And the second thing that didn't really thrill me about it is that I'm not really a big backstory on when I think of Rios, he's like the Han Solo of Star Trek. And I'm really not really big into that kind of stuff. I really would much rather read something about a Starfleet officer or something happening on a ship or
excuse holy me. Smokes. All right, everybody.
Or a mission or something like that. So when you put those two things together, I really wasn't super excited, and which I think is why it took me so while to read this book. But having said that,
yet he loved Tilly's book.
I'm glad that I read it, actually. And we'll get to that. We'll get to that as we move. Oh my God, as we go, as we move through the show. I feel like I got COVID cough back again here. we'll dive right into all these little twists and turns with this particular book. But knowing that Rios actually ends up staying behind on Earth of old, this book kind of, it's almost like maybe they knew about that they were going to do that before they wrote the book.
Well, because, I think what's really interesting, Jim, is that you and I both started the book before we knew that and ended the book after we knew that. So,
yes,
you know, we, it was like that became a
I'm the only one that started the book and ended before realizing what happened to Rios.
That's right. Charles was the only one who was on top of things, and Jim and I took forever to read the book. And so I just think it's kind of interesting that about three quarters of the way through the book is when I learned what happens to Rios. And I do think it colored the way that I sort of read the end of the book. You know, it was just having that knowledge in my back pocket sort of, you know, just changes how you see the events that the character goes through after that knowledge exists. So that I thought that was interesting.
Well, when we started the book, I started reading it, and I thought that it was kind of it didn't grab me right from the start, which is why it took me so long to finish it, because there wasn't like that big moment, that big thing where you just wanted to turn the page to see what happened next. It was just for me, it just that just never happened. It was more like, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's neat. But nothing that jumped out and said, well, I got to find out what happens next. So I just kind of took my time and just, you know, a little here, a little there, a little here, a little there. And then just put it down and never really got back to it. And once I did, though, I flew right through the end of it once I did. I think I was at like 30% on my Kindle. I was up to 70%. And then I sat down at camp because it was 98 degrees and so hot that I just whizzed through that last 30% in one day. And I was glad that I did, because I really ended up enjoying the book quite a bit once I started getting back into it. And
yeah, it's kind of interesting. I feel like, Jim, I think you're spot on, at least from my experience, and I'll be interested to hear what Charles has to say, but I had the same experience where the first like two-thirds of the book I was a little less interested in. I will say I'm pretty sure it starts with a space chase of some kind, which was kind of cool. But you're right. Then it sort of lulls into a lot of characters, a lot of different worlds and, you know, situations, which is cool, no doubt. But I didn't find any of it super duper compelling for the first two-thirds of the book. And then like the last third of the book, I really liked. It was, I can't remember exactly what the event was, but there was something that sort of happened that I was like, oh, okay, now I'm into it. And then it just kind of took off from there. So for me, first two thirds, a little dull. Last one third, I really dug. And so I overall, you know, did like the book quite a bit.
Talking about, okay, I told you guys he's my favorite author. So let me clarify. he wrote a book that we read on Book Nook quite a while ago called The Enterprise War. I love Pike. I was looking so forward to reading the book, and I hated it. But let me clarify something that Eric just said, which hit the nail on the head for me. In The Enterprise War, the author goes off on these tangents about characters and races and planets and things that we are not familiar with, that we don't know anything about. And so when he's going off about these things, it's just extraneous information because we don't know, or at least for me, who they are, what he's talking about, how to relate to them, how they relate to us. They don't mean anything. However, in this book, when the author does the same thing, book that he did in that book, except in this book, he's giving us backstory and filling in characters that we do know, planets that we have heard of, and missions that we're familiar with because the Enterprise, the TOS Enterprise has been there. The Enterprise D has been there. And so filling in the backstories and situations around these places and these characters and these things that we're familiar with made a lot more sense and was a lot easier for me to read and digest than Planet X, Y, and Z. So it's the same style, the same technique that was used in the Enterprise War, except in this case, he's doing it with things I'm familiar with. And I think that helped me to not become as bored as I did with the other book that he wrote.
So Charles, what about your kind of overall, you know, impression of the book and the arc of the book?
Okay, well, let me explain. Whereas our hosts go through and pick their Kindle up or their paper copy up to read, I go out. At the time I was doing the book, I was doing about a half hour a day walking. I do almost an hour on the weekends. So I burn through audiobooks. So I just pick up the audiobook. It's like I hit the patio, hit play, and off I go. And I go to the book and just listen to what's going on. And so it's like, it might be a slow spot, but I'm just going to listen right through it. Just keep on going. It's got to get pretty bad for me to actually stop and pause and say, okay, I'm done. I'm not doing it right now. So I actually went through the book. We end up meeting a species or a civilization that we've had prior knowledge to, and I thought it was rather interesting to work with that group. The fight scene, the battle scene Jim's thinking about is a test drive that went a little array.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was like, oh, okay, that's classic Rios.
Yeah.
That's what Rios would do. And there are many a times he would do something in here and it's like, yeah, that's Rios. That's Captain Rios. That's the character we're used to seeing. And unlike Jim, who's like, he's not a big fan on a lot of backstories, I love backstories. I love getting an idea where these characters people came from. And Rios is a very rich character, and we don't know much about him. And I really like the idea of saying, okay, we've got some backstory to him. And I don't know when this book was written, if they had any, if the writer had gotten any access to season 2 or not yet. Other than the beginning of the, how the story was supposed to start up.
Yeah, I'm not really sure when exactly if the author would have gotten access to information about the season. I think from some of the other authors that we've interviewed in the past, I kind of get this idea that the, Paramount comes to them with an idea of what they want to do, and they do it, or they come to an author and they say, "Hey, author, what do you think?" And it was interesting. I, you know, was reading a little bit about this book, and John Jackson Miller said that when he wrote this book, it was during COVID, so we were kind of in a lockdown type situation, and he really wanted to be able to bring something to the table that would be fun and would kind of lighten the mood, so to speak. And so, you know, in following up on what Jim said about Rios kind of being a Han Solo type character, you know, in that respect, I think we do get some Rios Han Solo moments, like this opening chase scene, or like some of the swindling, or, you know, that kind of stuff that sort of happens. The thing that I just found in general, and I think it's maybe what Jim was kind of reaching towards when he was talking about this author, is that he does these sort of world building things at times that end up not really paying off in the story. And so you do get some information that is like, okay, well, I've got the information, but why does that even matter? And this book has a little bit of that. I think less, and there are some really cool characters that I really like in this book. Like, I think the Ledger character is a really cool one. The Ferengi, I'm a little bit like, whatever, they're Ferengi. Like, I don't really, you know, love or hate them. But then there are some really clever things, and I will say, you know, Jim's probably going to go into some of the finer points, but I guess if I was to go, like, what's my favorite part of this book, it's really seeing the development of his holographic selves. You know, it turns out that La Serena has this, like, special technology where you can kind of scan yourself, and the reason that we see, you know, in Picard some drunk holograms is that Rios scanned himself drunk while he was making that hologram. And so that's why that hologram acts the way that it does. And he's a drunken helmsman, because occasionally Rios is as well. So I thought that was really clever. I love it. And most of the play with his holograms is towards the end of the book. I mean, there's definitely some earlier on in the book, but I don't think it gets really, really fun till probably the last, like, 10 chapters or so.
Well, guys, we're going to take a very quick commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to continue talking about Rogue Elements, the Star Trek Picard tie-in novel by John Jackson Miller. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after these very important messages.
Hi there, this is Eric from Trek Talking. Do you own a business, produce a product, or are planning an event that would appeal to Star Trek fans? Would you like to harness the power of this podcast to get your message out to the world? We here at Trek Talking are a show made by fans for fans, and we would love to help you share your love of Star Trek on the air, live every Monday and Thursday night at 7:30 Eastern. Contact us through Facebook Messenger at facebook.com/trektalkingandbeyond, or email us using the contact link on our website at podpage.com/trek-talking. We can't wait to hear from you. Engage. Trek Conderoga, the biggest little Star Trek event in the Northeast, is proud to present Trek Conderoga 2022, August 19th through the 21st, in Ticonderoga, New York, with headliners Gates McFadden, John Delancey, and Brent Spiner. Join Uncle Jim and Eric from Trek Talking as we marvel at the original series set tour, walking the corridors, sick bay, briefing room, captain's quarters, transporter room, and main engineering of the USS Enterprise. Our next generation tour guides will share behind-the-scenes information and explain how the sets were designed and erected. For most of us, the tour saves the best for last, the iconic main bridge where the adventures begin. Sound like fun? We think so too. So stop by the Trek Talking table on your way to tour the set and meet the stars. And tell them Trek Talking sent you. Engage.
Don't miss Fandom Fest New York, featuring special guests, vendors, artists, esports, tabletop games, and so much more. Fandom Fest, a unique con experience at Proctor's, August 12th through 14th.
And we're back, guys. And if you're interested in going to Phantom Fest, you can go to our Facebook page and you'll find a link to their page, and there's a special 30% discount. So if you're interested, please check that out. Okay, guys, we're back. We're talking about Rogue Elements from John Jackson Miller. And I got to tell you guys, I enjoyed this book a lot more than I thought that I would. And I think it's because it literally spans the next generation, which,
it touches back to TOS.
Yeah, Ledger is my favorite. Yes. I love the Ledger character.
She's amazing.
She is just the best character in the book. And I really, really, it was sad because I knew she was going to have to go away, but somehow by the end. But the fact that Rios is attracted to somebody who emulates the past, in this case, mobsters of the 30s, and knowing that he falls for a doctor in 2020 and goes back in time to stay with her is fitting, I think. That's one of the angles I really enjoyed about the thing was it made sense to me that that would happen, knowing where he ends up.
Totally agree with you, Jim. And I realized that we didn't really do a description for the fans. So in case you're listening to this podcast and you haven't actually read the book yet, but you're still listening because you love the sound of our voice, here's the scoop on the book. Starfleet was everything for Cristobal Rios until one horrible, inexplicable day when it all went wrong. Aimless and adrift, he grasps at a chance for a future as an independent freighter captain in an area betrayed by the Federation, the border region with the former Romulan Empire. His greatest desire? To be left alone. But solitude isn't in the cards for the captain of La Serena, who falls into debt to a roving gang of hoodlums from a planet whose society is based on Prohibition-era Earth. Sound familiar? Teamed up against his will with Ledger, his conniving overseer, Rios begins an odyssey that brings him into conflict with outlaws and fortune seekers, with power brokers and relic hunters across the stars. Exotic loves and locales await, as well as dangers galore. And Rios learns the hard way that good crew members are hard to find, even when you can create your own. And while his meeting with Jean-Luc Picard is years away, Rios finds himself drawing on the Starfleet Legends experiences when he discovers a mystery that began on one of the galaxy's most important days. That just kind of tells you the whole story right there, if you've read the book.
And, you know, we're talking about a piece of the action, of course.
Yep.
And the Iotians. Ledger's an Iotian. And throughout the book, the character makes all kinds of, you know, put them on ice and book them, ban out. Well, no, that's Hawaii 5-0. But I mean,
but she does use the lingo. She's got the lingo.
Yeah, she uses the lingo through the whole book, which is spectacular. I love that. And it all stems from, and this is, we don't find this out till much later in the book, which is why I think my interest perked up, is that we find out who Rios got the ship from. Well, where the ship came from, not who he got it from. And he happens to be an old drunk Klingon. So right away I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. He's an old drunk Klingon. But he's just not any old drunk Klingon. Oh, no. No, he's not. Let me get this right. Was it his father was Chang?
His father, yeah.
Yes, his father was Chang. And
Chang.
Yes,
that Chang. Yep.
Yes, that Chang.
And
the whole destruction of Praxis and the whole plot of Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, is kind of explored in this book from a completely different angle. We find out about the Romulans, we find out about the Federation, we find out about the Klingons, how they got together and what they really got together for, which wasn't war, I want to add.
Yeah, and in fact, Jim, go ahead, sorry.
Just that whole angle with how they got together and what they were brought together for versus what they actually did just fascinated me once it got started, and we see Kalas, we see Kang, we see Kor, we see Gorkon. We see them all in this
Thank
book.
You, Holodeck.
Yes, it yeah. was just, it was spectacular. I loved it. And
well, and
we
Jim,
also
get, and Jim, it doesn't stop there because it's, so it combines three prior Star Trek things, right? It combines a piece of the action. It combines our main villain, Kivas Faho, from The Most Toys, which is TNG era.
Yep.
And then, of course, you've already said Star Trek VI. So three, like, really solid, you know, either shows or movies in the Star Trek universe are brought together along with Cristobal Rios in this book.
And there's one more. There's another tie to TNG. And I didn't – you don't find this out till I think, like, the second-to-last chapter where the woman that Rios has the affair with is Xavier Quimby, XQ. And I never put that together until the very, very, very end when she told us who she was. And I was like, oh, my God, that's even more cool.
She's Q's X.
Q's X. Yes, it's Vosh. And I loved it. I just like –
Yes, that Vosh.
He's digging really deep into the Star Trek lore. They even play Fizbin. You guys remember Fizbin?
Oh, yeah. That, one of the last chapters is a Fizbin chapter, which is hilarious.
And he digs really deep. And the captain of the engineering ship that comes to save Rios at the end, the captain of that ship is the woman that Picard went to the academy with. And in Q's reality, he slept with her and it ruined his whole life. But of course, it goes back to normal and that never happened. That captain is that woman. And there's actually a line in the book at some point where somebody says, well, is she a lover of yours? And it's like, well, it depends on how you look at it. Because, you know, in the episode,
right.
he did have an affair with her, but in reality, he didn't. And I
right.
just thought that he pulled all these characters in from all these different episodes and all these different series and tied them all together into one. And I love it when they do that because
now,
that's what the Marvel Universe does. And that's what I like to see in Star Trek because they would all know each other. You would think they would read the logs of the Starship Enterprise and they would know some of these things, I would think. So I loved it. But like you said, it wasn't until much later into the book when all these juicy things, well, Klingon Bloodwine, we find out about that. Yeah, there's so much. I don't know where to... Charles, what did you think about the whole thing?
As I said, there were a lot of twists. There was a lot of references to multiple series. You did all that, but we didn't really didn't get into the TNG / DS9 era of Ferengi. We had the Ferengi that were out there a bit of conniving and having a bit of their own story in there. They threw a lot of stuff in there. I love Ledger does her holodeck. Oh, what about when we see Ledger's boss come in
mm-hmm.
and she comes in with the desk and the guys? That's so iOcean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I love all the iOcean stuff. And, you know, we've seen different interpretations of what happened to the iOceans after a piece of the action. Like, you guys remember the iOceans showed up in the Year 5 comics? And but in that version, they had reorganized their society differently. Here in this version, the iOceans are pretty much the iOceans, just as you would expect them from TOS.
And I also, like Charles was saying, the Ferengi, I thought it was so cool that the Ferengi in this book was the same Ferengi that Vosh had a run-in with in the Captain's Holiday episode on TNG. I was like, oh, that is so cool that they tied that all together, you know?
Yep, Captain's Holiday. And he was, I remember he was one of the only Ferengi who actually said human instead of human.
It was, he really, this author really knows his Star Trek, and he dug deep, deep into the lore, and he pulled it all out. I mean, every little bit and piece, he pulled it all out.
So
and
we
see,
talked
this
about.
This is the point I was making when he did that in the Enterprise War. As you said, Eric, it didn't. He gave you all this information and all this stuff, but there was no payoff. There was no, it didn't, it was almost like meaningless information. But in this case, all that backstory and all that information that he gives you about all these little characters and all these places is meaningful to you because you know exactly where he's coming from, exactly who he's talking about, exactly what episode, what movie, what character, what race. And it just makes, for me, it makes it that much more enjoyable.
You know, Jim, I wonder if that's the setting because, you know, Enterprise War is set during a time of war. It's set where the Enterprise is away while the Discovery is engaging in the Klingon war there. And, you know, the problem with Enterprise War, I mean, there are a few problems with Enterprise War, but I think that we find a lot of the secondary characters in that book a little uninteresting because they are maybe soldiers and or officers who lack a little bit of depth. And the nice thing about this book is not only does it bring in the familiar characters, like honestly, I think it's brilliant that they brought Kivas Faho back in because, you know, he goes to jail at the end of Most Toys, right? And you sort of learn that he makes it out of jail. And spoiler alert, he ends up back in jail by the end of the book. So, you know, you get to see that kind of like a little
time. And you see his collection, them attempting to disperse his collection in Lower Decks.
You absolutely do, yeah. And it's cool, too, because by the end of this book, you know, he has, here's more spoilers, he basically spent all his money trying to buy this really important thing, and then the really important thing turned out to sort of be a fake, and then there's a little story behind that we don't want to spoil too much, but basically he loses all of his money because he's trying to become the best collector, and he thinks he's going to regain it, and he doesn't, so he kind of like finishes the book poor and in jail, which I think is probably where he... you know, where he deserves to be, because this is the guy who tried to collect Data because Data was the only android. And of course that couldn't be allowed. And this is, you know, he committed murder to do it. And they kind of bring that up in this book too. They say, you know, to Cristobal, they're like, hey, listen, when you deal with this guy, you can expect that he is ready to kill people. In fact, he makes at least one kill in the book as well. I just love that they brought him back because he was a fantastic foil and a new type of character that I don't think we had seen up until that point in Star Trek.
And what was so cool about the kill he made in this book?
That's a question.
In the book, he kills the Romulan ambassador.
Yeah.
With a Veron T disruptor, which is highly illegal, and there's only 5 known in existence. The Federation took his first one, and he said he had to scour and spend a fortune to find another one, which he ended up using to kill the Romulan. The same exact
weapon.
Supposedly
the most one of the most painful ways to die, right?
Yep, and there's only 5 in existence. He had 2 of them. And if you remember the episode, you'll remember that little tidbit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we got to let Charles talk.
Yeah.
No, you're fine.
Because Charles is the one that got us onto this book.
Oh, I do all the novels. I know the next one we're dealing with, I can't remember the title. Oh, I think it's another Picard book. But yeah, I love listening to the novels, and it just, I actually listened to this one twice, thinking we were getting closer to the release date, which we didn't. But it was interesting. I think the second time going through it, I was listening to it. It'd been a couple of months or more, a few months since I'd read it and started going through it. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember this. Oh, okay, now I've got this scene set up in my head. So it's actually a good one sometimes to go through twice, because once you know the storyline, you understand the plot a lot better.
Yeah, it's kind of like watching the series a second time, right? You know where it's
exactly.
headed, so you pick up more of the detail along the way. And I think, as Jim and I were saying, you know, one of the things that this book did suffer from in the first two-thirds was there are a lot of characters introduced, and some of them don't matter, and you never know when you're supposed to be paying attention to a character and when it's somebody who's just going to go away. So, despite the fact that the story was really, really good, it is one of the downsides that has carried through from a couple of his other books as well. But we could talk a little bit more about the author himself and some of the other stuff he's done. In my research for this show, I was looking into, you know, does he have any other Star Trek cred other than these three novels that we've had the pleasure of talking about on the show. And I found out that in 2007, John Jackson Miller pitched a story for the Star Trek Starfleet Corps of Engineers series. This was to be a comic book series. The pitch was accepted, Miller's first prose fiction sale, but the series was canceled before his story was published. He later used one of the concepts from the story in a bonus novella in a Star Wars collection, Lost Tribe of the Sith. So he came up with some ideas for a Star Trek story. They were accepted, but they never made it. And so he's like, screw it. I'm taking this to the Star Wars universe, which is interesting. He also has a bunch of other Star Wars cred to his name. He has a bunch of Dark Horse comics. He's known for the Knights of the Old Republic series and Knight Errant comic series from Dark Horse Comics, which were, I understand, pretty good from Dark Horse. I never read them myself, but so he's going back and forth between the two franchises here. And it's interesting that it's clear that he's just got stories that he wants to tell. And so he's trying to find ways to get them out. But he's even touched things like Indiana Jones. I mean, he wrote the comic book adaptation of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and he's got a bunch of other comic books. These comic books, novels, all sorts of stuff. Very interesting guy.
Well, I can say that we've read every Discovery novel and all the Picard novels so far. And out of all of them, there's only one that I would say pass on. But every other one has been absolutely spectacular. All of them.
Yeah.
They've all been well worth the read.
Plus, we reviewed the Janeway biography.
And the Janeway biography.
Yeah, I mean, so, I would, overall, you're right, Jim. Although, I think the Enterprise War has enough in it that, I mean, I would still read it. I don't think when you read it, you can expect more than a six out of it. So to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I think I can predict Jim's going to like the next novel. The next novel in our series will be Star Trek Picard, Second Self, written by Una McCormick.
We know it'll be good.
Yeah.
But I got to say that this book was really, really good.
Except that you have to kind of get, like, it's good in the end, right, Jim? But both you and I literally took months to get through the first two-thirds of the book. So I want to say that, like, it's a good book. But
yeah,
that's why I'm really curious, Charles. Like, I know that you kind of what you were saying before was that the format that you listen in helps you plow through things that might otherwise be a little bit more
I go through it like I go through, it's like, okay, I got a half hour here. Okay, hit pause. Tomorrow I got another half hour of the book.
Sure. So I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, when you listen to this, did you find your, you know, was your mind wandering more at the beginning of the book than it was at the end? Or were there any listening differences that you found, or did you find the story compelling all the way through?
They made the story a little more compelling. Yes, there were some drawn out sections, but when you first listened to it, it's like, okay, it's a drawn out section, but what's going to happen? Oh, Rios is caught in the alley. What's going to happen to him? Okay, it's a long stretch, but you know something's going to happen. You know they can't just wipe out Rios right then and there. You got to keep Rios. So you're kind of like, okay, what is going to happen in this? And he gets a pretty good action scene, I think, in the factory. And his escape, or attempted escape.
Yeah, for sure.
There's
and I will say,
where you,
oh, go ahead.
There's a lot of scenes where, yeah, you kind of, am I worried about what's going to happen? Go ahead and wait and find out what happens. And it's like, oh, okay, I didn't expect that to happen. Okay, we got a twist in here. I love the scene where Rios is drunk. He's kind of not sure what to do with himself. And all of a sudden he gets to meet the captain, the previous captain of the ship. And the interaction he has with that hologram and that feeling of like, oh, boy, okay, something's going on here. I got to sober up and let's try to figure out what's going on. In fact, of how he has to get all the holodeck characters get created. Yes, you see them all in Picard season one, but you don't realize why he doesn't like them, but why he deals with them.
Mm-hmm.
And how each of them got created, and each of them's got their own personality. I think the author did a great job, and the reader did a great job of really kind of giving each of these characters a little bit of a personality. Because you got a bit of a Scotsman in there. You've got a bit of an Englishman in there. You've got these characters, and they're Rios. But they're their own version of Rios. And I think sometimes it's better for some of these books to go ahead and do audio and just get through the whole book.
I like, it's a good thing that the holograms look like Rios, because at the end when Arco shows up, the Iocean president or whatever, she the president?
The mob boss.
The big mob boss shows up. And there's that twist with all the holograms that look like Rios.
Yeah.
They didn't look like Rios. He couldn't have pulled that off. And I thought that was a great twist, too.
And
exactly.
Jim, I'm a little surprised you haven't mentioned the appearance by one of your favorite Discovery-era Klingons as well.
Oh, my God. There were so many. He pulls in everybody in it. I mean, there's Klingons galore in this book, really.
Let's not spoil it, but he goes out of the holodeck into a tavern. But this is no ordinary tavern. And that's, I think, what adds some to the book, is you're realizing it's like, oh, it's a tavern of Klingons. Well, it's more than just a tavern of Klingons. There's some Klingons there with a lot of stories.
And they also, in Picard season two, when the Elnor hologram is running around, in this particular tavern, these Klingons are the actual, they use like the what is it? These are just not holographs of the Klingons, but these particular famous Klingons that you're going to meet, and you'll know every single one of them when you walk into the bar. But they're programmed to be the characters, and they'll kill you if you piss them off or you act dishonorably.
Mm-hmm.
They will kill you. I mean, this, you know.
Well, especially since Rios has a tendency to turn off the hologram safety protocols when he needs to.
There are some. And to see these great Klingons interacting with each other was a lot of fun too. You know.
Yeah, I think given that Star Trek VI is so good and that it brings a fantastic Klingon-based story to the table with the destruction of Praxis. The fact that this book touches back to that movie in a lot of different ways, I think is a huge part of its success. You're just naturally interested in these characters because you remember them from the movie. And because you're dealing with collectors, you know, the Kivas Faho thing, like the book basically revolves around the collection of a particular object that is that requires a bunch of authentication, so to speak, as do many, you know, high-priced items that are traded, fake paintings, fake Mona Lisa, whatever, have been part of the you know, art collecting trade forever. This book continues that with Kivas trying to collect a particular item that has Star Trek VI ties, and just to me that is what makes it so fun, because you're actually familiar with the characters, and maybe it's one of the ways that this book is a little more successful now that I think about it, because you know, in Enterprise War he had to invent entire races of beings, and then the setting was just war, and so it was just those beings like killing our guys, you know, and there wasn't the ability to connect on a personal level was completely narrowed down to you caring about what was going on with Spock, or you caring about what was going on with one of the other characters. You know, you didn't really care about it. This one kind of spreads it out a little bit. And even though it's a book about Rios, you really start to care about characters like Ledger, or, you know, even the Bob boss had a really cool personality and fit right in with Arco, whatever her name was. It's the combining of these things that I think is actually kind of ingenious. You know, who would think to like combine piece of the action with Star Trek VI? You know, that's just like it's not something I would think of.
and throw in Vosh.
And throw in Vosh.
You know?
Yeah.
And you don't find out that she's Vosh until like the second to last chapter.
It is. It's right at the very end. Yeah.
You never find out that XQ is actually who XQ is. It was really good. It was really fun. I'm glad. When I sat down and started it at camp, I literally couldn't put it down. I just kept reading. And reading, and reading. I go out and walk the dog. I come back and I read some more. But it took me a while to get there.
Yeah, can I tell you that I literally finished the last 28% of the book today, and it only took me maybe like an hour and a half to do it because I just tore through the very end of the book, and it took me 2 months to get through the first.
the same thing with me. Took me months to get through the beginning, but once that switch is flipped, it gets really good really fast, and there's so much being thrown at you, so many characters, and you're like, oh, I remember him from this, oh, I remember her, and you want to find out what does it mean, what's the connection, why is
Wait,
that person
we, here? Didn't we say the same thing about Enterprise War, now that I think about it? Didn't we say that we liked the end of the book way, like the last bit of the book way, way better than the first like bulk of the book? I'm starting to remember this now.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think so. Well, because we got to a kind of finish, and we also realized, okay, why was the Enterprise so damaged when it ran into the Discovery? And they kind of had to fill in that gap of why Enterprise was away and why Enterprise was not involved with the Klingon War.
Yeah, that's kind of the arc of this author. Maybe his best writing happens, in the last third of the book. Maybe it's the setup and everything that's kind of marginally interesting, at least to us from what we've said. There could be, I would love
maybe
to hear
it
somebody
stretches things out a bit.
It kind of stretches
the story along, and you kind of get towards the end, and you really want to know but you get towards the end, you really want to know how he's tying this whole thing up.
Right. And some of these other authors, like Una McCormick, for example, for whatever reason, her books are extremely compelling from the first chapter, and you care about it right from the beginning, and you get to the end of the book, and you're like, I just want to turn around and read this book again. So there's something about the pace of writing or the way that characters are developed. Different authors are different, but I'm just making an observation. John Jackson Miller, clearly he is a fine author. I mean, these books are not bad books. They are good books, and he's got tons of
his books. He likes to stretch his books out.
But that's what it feels like. It feels like the first two-thirds is kind of like, it's like that episode that's 56 minutes when it could have been 48 minutes and been just fine.
I would recommend this one over Enterprise War.
Yeah, I would say so. I had it pulled up here a second ago. Die Standing was the Mirror Universe one of his that we also read and reviewed. And I have a little bit of trouble remembering how we liked that one. I feel like we kind of liked it.
Die Standing, I think, is a Giorgio book.
It is, yeah.
And we get a combination of, because we tied into both Emperor and Prime, we start off with Prime, then we get Emperor trying to act like she's Giorgio.
Mm-hmm. I can't quite remember what our opinion was of that book. I feel like we didn't have these kind of pacing issues that we're talking about right now. I feel like
was quite as long.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it's
Enterprise War is very long.
Yeah, I felt like it went on too long.
It just went on and on and on and on and on and just yeah. But I would recommend this one. This book, once you get going in it, and you'll start remembering who Bosch was and who this Ferengi was and where did Thisbin come from, and all these things will start to flood into your brain, and you'll just, your Star Trek knowledge, your light will flip on, and you'll say, oh yeah, and it becomes very enjoyable, at least for me anyways. I recommend it. I also thought it was great we found out why the La Serena looks like Eddie Van Halen's guitar.
Yeah. They talk about the paint job at the end of the book there too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
that
is pretty
was
cool.
Great. So. So overall, what do you think, Eric? How many chevrons?
I'd say out of 10 we'll do chevrons. I think, or La Serena's maybe, out of 10 La Serena's. I would probably give this book, let's see. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 7.2 because I feel like the beginning is only like a 6, but the end is like an 8.5. So, yeah, 7.2.
7.2. How about you? What do you think? What do you think, Charles?
I'll push this one up to an 8. I think really enjoying it.
That's exactly where I was thinking, just right around an 8, not much higher than an 8, but right around an 8, because he did such a great job of bringing in all these classic TOS. I mean, he tied them all together in a way that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So that wraps up our review of Rogue Elements, guys. I want to let you guys know that Thursday night, same bat time, same bat channel, we're going to do our Star Trek San Diego Comic-Con show. And we've got a lot of information. A lot came out of that, of San Diego Comic-Con. We're going to talk about all of it on Thursday. So you definitely don't want to miss that. What?
I said all of it? It's going to be amazing there's like, you guys, if you haven't checked it out, there's a lot to talk about.
There is. There is a lot to talk about. I think I've got some stories to cover just about everything. So
excited about that.
We have a lot to talk about, and we will talk about it. So that'll be on Thursday night, so you definitely don't want to miss that. Next Monday on this show, we're going to talk about toxic fandom. And I wanted to get this out there because we've heard from William Shatner. We've heard from Simon Pegg. And I want to get our opinion, our side of toxic fandom. Does it exist? Is it real? Is it made up? Is it legit? Is it not legit? Is it justified? I want to talk about all of that next Monday. So, that's what's going to be going on for the next week, guys. Head over to our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond. Give us a like. Give us a follow. We'd love to hear from you. And anything else you guys want to throw in before we wrap up the show, Eric?
I don't think so, man. Just looking forward to seeing you and seeing all the fans at Trek Conderoga next month.
Oh, that's going to be fun. How about you, Charles? Anything you want to throw in before we wrap it up?
Nope, just ready to start talking about San Diego.
All right, guys. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying please stay safe and be good to each other. Star Trek fans are the best fans. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Night, y'all.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.